It is time to check in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our weekly Tacky Talk podcasts. Hey, Tacky, how are you?
Hey, Joe. Good to see you again in another wonderful week in the month of March.
I know it's coming to a close. Actually, this coming weekend is the last weekend of March.
I know it zips right by. I mean, you know, we've done what, 3 calls in this month, and before we know it, it's April. And it's 60 degrees today, it seems like. And it's in the 50s now, according to the computer. I stare down at it. But I mean, the weather's warming up. But as we all know, we talk about this over and over again. Just keep an eye for the next snowstorm. You never know in New England.
Exactly. I don't put my shovels away till Memorial Day, just to be safe.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same way. My snow scrubber, ice scrapers will stay in the car.
Those stay there all year because I just forget. Before you know it, you need them again. So you might as well just leave them there.
Yeah, I agree. And about less than a month away to the Boston Marathon too. Coming quickly to the next school break.
That's right, April school vacation, yeah, Patriots Day, Marathon Day. It's the 10-year anniversary of the bombings this year, actually.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine who's the father of Sean Collier, stepfather, but really his father. I mean, he raised him since he was like 5, so really his dad when you come right down to it. It's going to be a tough month for the family over there, and I need to check with him. Actually, we're supposed to get lunch with him. He's a co-worker, Meiji's office, so... I'm supposed to get lunch with him tomorrow, but it looks like it's going to be a formal session. So I'm going to have to postpone lunch with him and see how he's doing. And it's tough on the family. I mean,
For folks who don't know, that was the MIT police officer who was shot and killed by those bombing suspects a couple of days after the bombings.
Yeah, and he was actually going to be on the water, I believe, the Watertown Police Force. Was Watertown, Cambridge? I think it's Cambridge. Cambridge Police Force. He was already getting lined up to go there before he was murdered. So they're doing an annual fundraiser. I normally should not promote fundraisers this way, but they are a fundraiser for the Sean Collier Memorial Fund. The family and their friends continue to run the marathon in his name. Obviously, you guys can just Google up Sean Collier Memorial Fund if you're interested in learning more. And make a donation if you like it, or just read up on the good work they've been doing for the last decade. It's got 3 families in particular, as you know, from the tragedy of the bombing. And every anniversary is bad, but when you get to like a so-called big number, so it makes it much harder because these kind of milestone numbers in our minds.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be tributes to the victims that day as well. So folks can look out for those as well. But in the short term, what's going on Beacon Hill?
Well, tomorrow we're going to be voting on $150 million Chapter 90 bond bill. Chapter 90 is the part of the law that provides, it's relative to highways, roads, and bridges. So generally every session, generally the first half of the 2-year session, we will vote for a bond bill to provide local aid to cities and towns on road and bridge work. $150 million is what we're going to try to push through tomorrow. Don't expect any opposition, to be frank with you, because every community benefits from this, some more so than others. Quincy is actually a major beneficiary because of size. We're a bigger population. We have a lot more road systems. Mileage of road is much more than a smaller community. So things like Chapter 90 works in Quincy's favor versus, let's say, a smaller town, out deep Western Mass, where you have much lesser density of roads and much less people there. Obviously, you can see the argument of people in Western Mass who want more money because even though they have less density and density of road, the roads are longer and they're subject to different weather events.
Right.
So as you can tell, this is one of those continuous struggles in the State House regarding, dense urban reps like myself versus more less dense urban reps out in Western Mass. Even though we have the same population, they have to revisit more towns with the same population representation. So that conversation is probably going to happen. It always happens. I'll be honest with you all. It constantly happens every session.
Well, if they weren't doing the job, then it wouldn't happen. So it's good they're talking about it.
Exactly. And these are kind of the conversations we have in the State House where different groups representing different constituencies and something just like this, make sure the voices are heard and we'll see where we go from there. But, currently the formula, I don't expect a formula change at all. We did some formula adjustments the past several years for what we refer to as kind of like emergency monies and kind of shovel-ready critical projects. We've appropriated $50 million here and there, bond money to go to targeted projects, especially those in smaller communities that aren't ready to go, need some startup money, and help them out. And obviously, smaller communities can't bond as much as a bigger community. I mean, a larger tax base means you have better bonding ability. There's less likely you have to do a Prop 2.5 override in a bigger community versus a smaller one. So, these are some things we've done. I mean, we've put some money aside, and we probably will again later on. There'll be another larger transportation bond bill. There's always a larger transportation bond bill, feels like, or a capital bond bill down the road. And these issues will be brought up again, and we'll work towards trying to help some smaller communities out as we keep moving forward.
Yeah, I think in the past, Quincy's got like 1.9 million, something like that.
Yeah, generally how it works is you get about $900,000+ for every $100 million in the Chapter 90.
Okay.
But again, the cities changed since the last census count. So sure. Fully expect that the number will be, into the mid 900s. So, probably like $1.6 million, maybe. Mm-hmm. Which is not insubstantial against 150 million. Obviously, the biggest communities like Boston, Lowell, Springfield, bigger, larger, a lot more road system, maybe not exactly the same size population, but it's the sheer number of roads that gets them a little bit more money than we would in Quincy. But it's a lot when you look at the size of it.
Yeah, and there's no strings attached, right? You get to spend it on the roads that used to seem fit.
Yeah, and it's cash up front, and the state pays the bonds. Yeah. Which means that there's no additional debt service on the city. We pick up the debt service, and interest rates have gone up, as you've mm-hmm. already seen. So this is actually a huge benefit to the city right now as we pick up the interest costs. Obviously, the Healy administration, unfortunately, is moving into a high interest rate cycle as they move through their capital budget for issuing new bonds with the state treasurer. You obviously want to get the best rate as they sell their bonds. But I mean, given the fact that U.S. treasuries and corporate bonds and a lot of other bonds have gone up in interest rates, municipal bonds will have to remain competitive with other bonds. Obviously, not going to get treasury rate for municipal bond, but because the risk levels are different. But obviously, there'll be competition regarding bond rates to try to be able to buy them. So whether it be state or municipal, I mean, it's a high interest rate environment. It's going to impact U.S. taxpayers because, the bonds are going to cost more, but also mm-hmm. changes how much we can borrow because we're going to be paying more back on bonds.
Yeah, well, I mean, seeing as we're on the topic, let's talk about it. We're taping this on March 22nd, and the Fed is meeting pretty much as we speak about what they're doing with the benchmark interest rate hike.
Yeah, as you've all seen, the interest rate has been going up, quite a bit in the last 12 months, ranging from 0.75 or 75 points. Now they've slowed down to 25 points, 0.225. I anticipate, it'll be 0.25 again today, but, who knows what the Fed's going to do. Those who watched the congressional hearings last week or listened to some of it, they heard, a couple of hours of each day. The fight against inflation is a priority to the Fed. We'll try to maintain jobs. And this has been a really kind of odd economy, as you all know, because unemployment still remains low. The Main Street in particular has a hard time hiring folks. Wages have gone up because of the shortage of labor. It's competition for labor, capitalist economy, right? You're competing for labor. You have to pay the price to try to get that labor. And, the Fed's trying to get us to save money and spend less and try to borrow less by raising interest to slow the economy down. And the economy has not slowed as fast as we would hope. And the CPI number, consumer price index number in February was 6%, which is still far higher than 2% target by the federal government, which the Fed Reserve, 2% is probably not exactly going to hit exact 2%, but I think in the zone of 2%. But, let's be honest, this is not a science here. It's not bullseye. But I mean, 6% is still very high. If you take out energy, in housing, it's still well in 5%. So, we talk about eggs every week here. Price of eggs haven't gone down. And you have this other inflationary pressure that I don't think is fully reflected in the big CPI numbers, wages at the local level, too. The people working in markets, those either at business markets or the pharmacy or any other Main Street store, including, as I pointed out, a couple of big chains, there ain't enough people working there. You see it. It's very obvious. There's not enough staffing. And as a result, that affects stores need to compete, as I said earlier, compete for labor. And then that's translating to the prices in the stores too. And I'm all for people making more money. And I don't mind paying to have people make more money, but just be aware that the big macro numbers in Washington doesn't consistently translate to the small numbers that we feel every day. And because there's these other factors that are a little bit different because every economy and every community isn't the same. And the big macro federal number kind of averages out, you know, all the economies in the United States, because one community is different from another in this country. So, you know, it's a little, you know, it's also a lagging indicator, meaning that the data is always 4 to 6 weeks late. And we're trying to make decisions on old data because you can't get data instantly the day of. Like, you don't know what's going on right this minute as we're talking. So it's a tough job for the Fed. And, you know, of course, the banks are, we talked about this twice already, but the banks are continue to be an interesting issue.
Yeah, well, the interest rates are having an impact on what's happening in the banking industry, certainly.
Yeah, the mega banks, you know, Bank of America's, JP Morgan's, mega banks going to weather this just fine. After the 08 recession, they completely changed how they did business, especially after watching Lehman Brothers go down. So they've all changed how they do business. And some of you may not like your big bank because the customer service isn't as good as a smaller bank or a regional bank, which is why you want them. But the regional and small banks, you know, have to decide how to compete for customers against big banks. Some are offering higher interest rates. If interest rates are too high, you should be very suspicious. Some are offering more different types of customer service, especially for small and mid-sized businesses. Some are targeted, like First Republic, we've talked about, we've seen it in news, targets really the super wealthy. It's not you and me goes to First Republic. And some places like Silicon Valley Bank that went under offered special perks for corporate customers. And for you to get VC, venture capital money, through Silicon Valley Bank, you would need to be their customer in addition to access that venture capital money. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they create those incentives. And there's also different risky behavior, right? I mean, 08 was floating mortgages to people who couldn't pay their mortgages. I mean, this common sense stuff is just like mind boggling, right? That to all of us listeners, like, you know, you don't give money, people can't pay you back. Right. But some of these other ones, you know, did risky things like going to cryptocurrency, which is Signature Bank and Silvergate. They took your deposit money and decided to make money by going to crypto. And crypto market crashes and the bank went with it. Obviously, also some poor lending decisions as well. And, you know, how they managed deposit money as well was poor decisions. Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, you know, they made some poor decisions regarding how to make money using treasuries, which are safe bets, right? U.S. Treasuries are a very safe bet. But, you know, when they found out that their depositors were taking more money out because of inflation, because, you know, you got to pay your bills and pay your workers.
Their
deposits weren't there, and they had to sell bonds. Long-term treasury bonds, very low interest rate ones. I mean, we're talking like, you know, 0.5%, 1%, the treasury bonds, the long-term ones at discount value, which means they were actually losing money. And there's right. only so much you could lose before it becomes impractical, because why would you buy a long-term 1% bond when I can get a six-month bond for five times its value? Then you can get
wouldn't. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you got that, you know, the inverse yield curve. In simple terms, is again, the long-term bonds interest rates are lower than the short-term bonds are higher. So the curve is inverse. Normally, it's the other way around. Short-term borrowing has low interest rates. Long-term borrowing has high interest rates, which is why a 30-year mortgage, you know, for example, should have a higher interest rate than a short treasury bond at 6 months, which also creates this like subprime problem because. Because subprime says that you're getting a below rate interest on your loan weighed against the short term. So, so there's all kinds of unintended and strange consequences of the current banking market. So, but the Fed's also did something they've never done before, is that a 100% insured, the FDIC 100% insured recovery for an SVB situation. So no business could not make payroll. The concern was that if the businesses lost all their money as depositors, a segment of the business community would just completely collapse because 95% of the deposits or 92% or whatever were not insured. And the vast majority, again, were targeted business customers. They weren't you and me, which is why this is kind of a different situation than many banks, residential depositors. So First Republic, again, is, you know, big businesses, mega wealthy. And they're running the same problem over there, as the mega banks have dumped $30 billion into securitize their deposits to try to send confidence to the banking customers that, you know, things are okay, which is ironic because every time you make a move to try to reassure banking customers things are all right, the banking customers are thinking something's got to be wrong if you got to reassure us everything's all right. It becomes this vicious circle of the whole, well, if there's nothing wrong, why'd you have to do something? But you're telling us we're okay because you did something because nothing's wrong yet. It's like this vicious emotional cycle, which has resulted continuously, this still runs on banks.
Yeah.
Because of this weird way of trying to reassure confidence, nothing's wrong. If there's nothing wrong, why are you doing anything?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, folks like you and me are just kind of stuck in the middle and don't really know what to do.
Yeah, that's exactly it, right? People are now in a panic and don't know why, because if everyone says it's okay and we had to do things to make it okay, then was it okay in the first place, right?
Right.
It's really kind of an interesting psychological situation. And also there's been talking this weekend about, you know, whether we're nationalizing banks. This is an anti-national bank country, Marbury versus Madison. Way back in the old days regarding bank naturalization was actually a very much founding father conversation about not necessarily capitalism, but more importantly about securitization of money, how to keep money safe for depositors and how to get loans out, and how to have a competitive marketplace regarding banking that will ensure movement in the economy. And whether the best choice is to have a nationally run bank, a state government run bank, or is it better to have a private sector bank? And the founding fathers way back when, the 1800s, have finally settled the discussion, you know, allowing only privately owned banks. The theory is that a private owned bank with deposits would be smart to protect the depositors from going bankrupt, because if the bank loses your money, you're bankrupt, right?
That's the only place you're getting your money from, so you want to protect it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, be able to issue loans, which is how they make money. And then the national, you know, Federal Reserve Bank was the national bank. I mean, it's part of the Treasury Department, sort of weird way. It's complicated, quasi-independent thingy. But I mean, the modern Federal Reserve Bank was created after the Great Depression by the mega banks to try to create some accounting oversight, as well as create insurance deposits and other mechanisms to try to prevent the 1927, 28, 29, 31, 32 crashes, which, you know, the banking industry was completely devastated.
Yeah, it led to the Great Depression, right? Yeah.
AKA It's a Wonderful Life movie. The mega banks survived barely. But I mean, the regulation for banking came from mega banks to prevent banks from dying, and they don't like the idea of mega banks running the country. They, you know, part of the reason they did that was they want to maintain, you know, saving and loans, credit unions. Well, now we call them credit unions. And then you have smaller banks to keep them alive, because the mega banks don't want to be running everything. And especially back then, you think about 100 years ago, you didn't have the internet. Telephones weren't quite the same. Brick and mortar banks were crucial. Everybody operated on cash. Credit wasn't the same as you see credit now. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no electronic transactions. And even then, before we had electronic transactions, you know, people made a run at a bank. You got in line. You saw that in Russia when this war started in Ukraine. People was in line getting the money. There's a run in the banks. And the national bank in Russia, their version of Federal Reserve, was desperate trying to keep rubles in the country.
Yep.
You couldn't take your rubles up because no more rubles, no one could, you know, get money. You got a big problem. You'd start defaulting.
Right.
So, you know, same thing in the States here. And the only difference today versus, you know, Wonderful Life, is like referring, is that you can do electronically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happens a lot quicker. That's all. Yeah.
So the running the bank moves a lot faster. And, you know, and social media, I mean, a VC in Israel, for example, WhatsApped a whole VC group and said, get your money out now, because they got word that the Silicon Valley was going to do a stock sale to try to boost up their deposits, because they were taking massive losses in the bond sales, which then caused the panic. And then it just kind of steamrolled from there. One, believe it or not, social media based conversation in a closed network, which is WhatsApp, but it had made its way to Twitter, into the real world.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And then suddenly all these depositors caught wind of this, and then you had to run into bank. So the run into bank was inside of 24 hours or less, and they had to try to stop people from taking the money out. Otherwise, the bank instantly becomes bankrupt. So, yeah, I mean, it's different. I mean, it used to be You could run in a bank, but it was kind of like, you know, three people went in and suddenly 300 came right after that in person. And, you know, word gets around in the street. It's not like a run a bank is a new thing. It's the speed.
Mm-hmm.
But once the run starts, it's like a tidal wave. You can't really stop it.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know, emotions take over at that point. You could give them all the facts that until you're blue in the face, but it wouldn't matter.
Absolutely correct. And, you know, again, I remind folks, you know, your credit unions, your local small banks here, you know, are very conservative how to manage deposits. They have concerns. Obviously, talk to the bank. You know, we have regional banks here, you know, Eastern, you know, Santander, and many other regional banks. And, you know, they're not crazy in terms of like investing half their money in cryptocurrency, for example, to try and make money for the bank.
Right.
And you always can watch the stock market, but banking stocks right now make no sense. I mean, you know, mega banks like Bank of America has been taking hits and they're in no danger of.
Right. No, matter of fact, people are flocking to them because they think they can't fail.
Yeah. So don't get too caught up in the stock market. Exactly. Right. Because some of these, you know, super banks, mega banks, you know, yeah, you're right. Deposits going in because they're trying to leave regional banks and there is no risk of zero deposits. So, yeah, it's a lot of disemotion response in Wall Street and, you know, and the I expect that Congress, hopefully, we can hope, actually, you know, looks in this investigation with and, you know, blame the FDIC as doesn't really solve the problem. And remind folks, I mean, during the Trump administration, Congress and the president repealed the bank review stress tests that were put in place after the financial crisis in 08 because, you know, places like SVB and Signature were lobbying to take these regulations away. So they didn't have to be subject to the same reviews as bigger banks are. Clearly, that was a mistake. Does it mean that would have stopped it from happening? Not necessarily, but could have been a better chance of warning signs that something was coming and perhaps come up with a plan before running the bank happened by the feds and the state regulators? Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't say that those repeals are 100% cause, but could have possibly reduced the chances of it? Yeah.
Could be, yeah. And of course, the concern now is the FDIC solvent?
Well, that's a problem, right? I mean, I've heard some reports there's over $30 trillion in bank, like well over $30 trillion plus dollars in deposits in America. Your money's part of $30 trillion. You know, the national debt's $30 trillion, which is a whole other conversation we'd have
with
the national debt. And the FDIC does not have $30 trillion. They cannot insure 100% deposits. I didn't realize how much money we had physically or electronically of U.S. citizens, U.S. depositors, whether it be business or personal. That doesn't count all the money that's traded in Europe and Asia that isn't part of our banking system, where you know, U.S. dollars are strong. 70-80% of all global trade are done in U.S. dollars, electronically and physically. You know, I didn't realize just 30 trillion, you know, US dollars were just over, just, you know, within the borders, essentially, not counting, you know, stuff in Antigua, right? No, the casino game. You guys, you
know, right, yeah.
So you actually know what I'm talking about, right? Those are US dollars. So, no, they cannot do it. There's no way the US government can insure $30 trillion in deposits. It's not happening.
No, I mean, obviously, the thought is that not every single bank throughout the country is going to go bust all at once.
Yeah, there's some discussions out there from economists and banking people smart and I floating some actually very simple ideas that, you know, I have no clue. I don't do banking regulation. But I mean, maybe increase the deposit secure insurance from $250,000 to a higher number that reflects the real number today in small businesses and customers. Residential customers. And then, you know, does you have mega banks and other banks allow big customers to buy insurance?
Mm.
So the FDIC, you could buy insurance for FDIC. If you're a scaled system, the bigger your deposit, the bigger fee you pay in insurance.
Yeah.
The bank should fail. Being a big customer, you can get money back. Obviously, you insure your deposit. But since you're a bigger corporation or bigger business or a bigger depositor, you're like, you know, super rich, you can pay more into the FDIC as insurance. Yep. And, you know, that's what insurance is. Insurance is everyone pays in. I hope you don't need it. And if something happens, you know, you have the ability to insure your assets.
Yeah.
That's a conversation's out there. It may or may not require an act of Congress. But if you're, you know, worth, you know, Bill Gates' money, and you're really scared about losing your money potentially in a bank, you know, Bill Gates should spend mundo dollars to the FDIC to secure his, well, you know, us who are, you know, don't have a lot of money. And, you know, be subject, you know, underneath the $250,000 or maybe a little more in deposits. But I mean, if you're like a $20 million person, you know, obviously, you know, you want to buy insurance, you wouldn't pay the same amount as Bill Gates, but you would pay more than you know, other folks.
Yeah, and, it's not a bad idea, you know, to look at it, at least, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's going to happen or not, but this is one of the interesting ideas floated out there that, you know, maybe depositors should take their security note in their hands if they're a certain size depositor.
Interesting. Yeah. See where that goes. It's obviously the banking industry is not caught up with the times.
Well, I agree. And it's, again, it's a different world. I mean, you know, we talked about 08 earlier, giving bad loans to people who can't pay for it. You know, saving loan scandal was a whole kind of like moving money around. You know, the, you know, high interest rate issues back in the 70s, you know, inhibited growth of the stock market, actually inhibited ability to investment because people couldn't pay 14%, right? You know, back in the day. And then we also had too long on basically free money. Interest rates were so low that, you know, saving was very difficult for people. And you could take loans out and pay minimal interest. And we call that free money because the people who give you the money to loan to you isn't making that much money off your money. And the people like depositors and U.S. depositors aren't getting a big enough cut. And I can argue we're still not getting a big enough cut on the mortgage that you received. I deposit helping your mortgage and I should be recompensed a bit for putting my money at risk because you took the mortgage. And that's part of how banking works.
That's right. Yeah.
But now you have them playing the stock market. They get into business like insurance, like banking in 08, you know, would insure themselves. Like they would be self-insuring their own deposit against
you. You would think somebody would have said, that doesn't sound like such a great idea.
No, but commissions. People make commissions. And that was the problem. And it became, you're right, you know, it became a self-propelling situation where a snake eats its own tail. So, I mean, you know, some of those practices were curtailed, but you still got the derivative market. You may have heard, you know, selling your bonds and CDs and other type of stuff, you know, in the secondary markets. Like, you know, I joked about earlier, my student loans went through like four different banks at one point.
Yeah.
They kept selling my student loan to somebody else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's always going to be part of the system. And it, you know, some of that hasn't really been addressed, but the derivative market's not the reason this time. It is banks making bad decisions, not believing the Fed Reserve is going to do what it did. And if the Fed Reserve did, the banks did not make good decisions about that because for some reason, I still don't understand, they just don't believe the Fed Reserve. The Fed Reserve is doing everything it said for the last year. They basically said it straight up. We're doing this interest rate increase and they've been doing it. And for some reason, these very smart, very well-paid folks pretended like, oh, well, they're not really doing it. I'm like,
but they have for the past year.
Yeah, this is why I find mind-boggling. It's like so-called smart people making big money, you know, can be so stupid.
Well, that's how they're blinded. They're blinded by the dollar signs, yeah.
No, absolutely. And, you know, not to say you shouldn't take some, you know, strategic risk, smart risk to make money as a banker because you got to keep the lights on, right? Let's be honest about that. I mean, you know, there's, you know, you're risking depositor money. And it, you know, should be a higher standard set. You know, my money and your money being used for the bank to make money, that we get our fair share, and to make sure that we're not at risk of losing our money.
Hence
the FDIC insurance for $25,000 and below, and $50,000. Oh, sorry, $500,000 for couples, and per class. Again, go to the bank and talk about per class. It's a little bit complicated.
Yes.
And of course, we've got a brokerage firm. They have this thing like SPIC, I think it's called. They have basically their version of the FDIC, where the brokerage firms actually pay into insurance to protect your deposits in the same FDIC does. So if you're on Charles Schwab or TD Bank or Fidelity, whatever, and like, you know, there's a run on them, they would, you know, because they're small investors under little Roth IRAs, the IRAs, I mean, or maybe you make, you know, little mutual funds that you or index funds because you want safe, small revenue as you kind of plan your long retirement. I mean, we're not talking huge money, folks, right? you know, those are also protected under different forms. So don't feel like you have to do a run in your brokerage firm.
Right, right, exactly. Want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the MBTA?
Yes, I've got constituent emails. I've read them. I'm aware of it. I don't have great answers for you because we're still trying to figure it out ourselves. As you're all aware, it takes a lifetime to get from anywhere to anywhere on the MBTA because it's moving at a snail's pace crawl about 10 miles per hour. In normal times, above ground, it's closer to 40 miles per hour. Below ground, it's about 20, 25, even lower than 20 because of the bends inside the tunnel. You sometimes don't notice it because the stations are so close together underground. You're moving at 10 miles an hour, you really don't see the difference. But also, you know, you don't want to derail. I mean, duh. You know, last night I was out with Congressman Lynch, as well as Senator Keenan, Senator Timothy, with the MBTA at Quincy Adams Station. And, you know, we're discussing the tea about, you know, the maintenance projects, and we saw them unrolling the tie replacement. We were informed that the ultrasound test they do on rails happens twice a year. The entire light rail system, basically the subways. But the commuter rail is on a different system because it's private. It's a private contractor. It's a privatized system, so they have a whole different mechanism on the commuter rail. And the commuter rail, believe it or not, it's mostly newer than the MBTA. Most people forget that. It is actually newer than most of the T. And they discovered that age and wear and tear and, you know, the quality of the steel, the rails have been declining to the point where, you know, they can't keep up with the maintenance. There's just too much. And the rails are, you know, under a lot of stress, and they are replacing as quick as they can. One thing people don't realize is that maintenance window for the MBTA tracks is between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. And we learned last night, because we watched it happen, you know, it takes about an hour for the safety protocols to be completed. Sometimes even more than an hour regarding turning off the third rail, inspecting this area, moving your equipment safely. You have to drive on the rail. Your vehicles cannot damage the rail more while you're on the rail trying to get down the track, as you guys ridden the train, and I'm aware of it too. There is a lot of space between the train tracks and the fence or whatever. There's also a slope in certain section, and there's some bridges involved. And if you're in the tunnel, there ain't a lot of space. You guys have seen the concrete walls like 2 feet from you, as well as the
2 feet. 2 feet's a lot. It's more like, six inches.
Yeah, the giant billboards staring at you. Through inside the train tunnels. So, I mean, this is very slow, tedious work. So as a result, they've decided to take abundance of caution by shutting down the system earlier in certain spots, particularly, you know, right now, Quincy sections shut down earlier. They shuttle bus folks, and I know it's very inconvenient. They get earlier done, so get that first hour inspection done earlier, and they have the 1 hour inspection before they turn the power back on. And they want to make sure when they do the ties and the rails, you rail down, it's got to be tested, inspected, and it's a night inspection before they turn the power back on and ride that train. Because, you know, I don't have to tell you guys, you've seen enough train accidents around the country at this point. When it goes bad, it doesn't just kind of go bad. You will die. I mean, it's people die. It's just the bottom line. So as a result, you know, you think about it, you have 1 hour to safety shut down, 2 hours of work, 1 hour to safely come back up. You don't have enough time, so which is why they're doing what they're doing now. And even then, you know, there's a stress test involved. So when the trains do run even at 10 miles an hour on new rail, they have to inspect that rail again to make sure that that the stress of the train running, even at slow speeds, and how it settles to ensure how it's done. Now, I'm going to tell you, 70 years ago, they didn't do this. They just put stuff down and just hope for the best.
That's right.
I have a hard time believing in 1935 that they, this whole mechanism was shut down and shut on. I'm betting
they didn't have ultrasound, first of all.
Yeah, there was no ultrasound. It was all visual tests. I mean, I'm betting, you know, 90 years ago, it wasn't like this. And also, they discovered along the way that as, you know, new rail came up and even old rail, things were just improvised.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I didn't, you know, they were telling us an orange line, it became a bit of a horror, is that down at the Tufts Medical Center station, they don't have tail rise. They just filled it with concrete.
Wow.
They laid up the rail, elevated, and just filled the whole thing with concrete. And of course, you know, Boston's wet because most of it's swamp. And trains rattle and ground settles, and eventually the rail starts to give out, as well as all the supports under the rail. But the rail support system's buried in concrete. Hmm. By the way, that's not how you're supposed to do this. Just no, you just don't pour concrete, and just put some sticks up and put a rail on it. So the T is discovering that a lot of this stuff were jerry-rigged, for lack of a better term, inspected before modern systems. And this is a huge problem for the T. And it's not the current staffing. Well, the staffing is a problem. It's not the current executive staff's creation. They just inherited stuff done by our grandfathers, or maybe your grandfather, but somebody's grandfather, who decided, no one really has a standard. We're just going to do whatever we want. Because people want it done, they want it done cheap, they want it done now.
Yep, exactly right. Yeah, it's all about speed and efficiency and safety.
Because people want it done now. People don't really think about it until something bad happens and suddenly we slow everything down. People are upset we slowed it down because people died. We talked about the banks earlier. It's just a part of human behavior. And the staffing is a big issue. So if you guys are all looking for a job, the MBTA is looking for workers still. It is a very hard market. They're same problem we're facing. And they brought up some interesting points. I mean, why would you want to be working, $35, $40 an hour working rail replacement where you can drive with Uber?
I guess that's a good point. Yeah.
Or do temp work. And unfortunately, Massachusetts has been shifting to a white collar economy for a long time. I mean, we don't encourage people to work with their hands like they should. And we probably should be talking about that in our education system even more, that 4-year education, maybe not for you. Maybe it's a 2-year education. Maybe it's, maybe you should go make some, good money younger and then, reevaluate your life.
There's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of folks retiring in the vocation, and they're not being replaced.
And I remember when I very first got into this government, the most popular phone call I got was, can you give me a job at the T? Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about this last night, I was thinking to myself, I was like, I don't know the last time people asked me for a job for a T. I just don't remember. It's been that long. So, I mean, you don't actually have to ask me if you want a job at T. Go apply. They need humans.
Oh, they're offering bonuses and education. And
don't bother calling a politician anymore. Just apply. They need humans. I mean, this is the bottom line. And also, for example, we also have the summer jobs ready for DCR. They need lifeguards. If you have a lifeguard certification, CPR certification, I mean, they'll do it for you. It's part of the training for them. Mm-hmm. But you got, any kind of lifeguard experience, strong swimmer, you have CPR or not CPR trained, doesn't matter. Like I said, they're going to train for you. Definitely go to DCR website and apply for these summer jobs. I think it's going to be a very tough time for seasonal workers again in Massachusetts. I think the Cape's going to have a very hard time. I think the Cape's going to spend a lot of money, as well as the Berkshires, to get temporary work this summer. The visa programs, again, immigration is a solution to a lot of problems, but the visa programs are still screwed up. Are getting temporary seasonal workers in Massachusetts. If you're 16-year-old kid, 17-year-old kid looking for a seasonal job, I mean, there's no shortage of opportunities out there.
The governor is proposing an increase in funding for the immigration program and refugee program as well.
Yeah, my friend Mary Truong runs the program. She's actually a Vietnamese refugee. And I remind folks, refugees are different from immigrants. Immigrants came here. Refugees had to come here. The U.S. government had to take them out. It's different. And people forget that sometimes. I was reminded of that by my other colleagues, Asian Caucus colleagues, about the difference between immigrants and refugees again. Mm. But, Mary does a great job over there. And it's a definitely underfunded thing. And, I won't say, told the governor about anything in terms of what she should do and not do. She's the governor. But, in my conversations in the past, kind of brought up the importance of immigrant workforce, and it's a huge issue as trying to get people jobs, because a lot of jobs we filled. And the faster, I truly believe, the faster we help get people up to speed on English skills, job placement, they won't be on government benefits, but more importantly, addresses massive issues in our economy that are currently glad to see the governor is putting another $1 million in debt into that agency.
Yeah, I just saw the Quincy College, too, just got a state grant to support their English to speakers of other languages and their high school equivalency programs as well, in that same regard.
English second language program is actually kind of moving to ebb and flow. It's actually kind of somewhat economic sickler, but it never stops in Quincy in particular. The city has always have a movement of immigrants constantly coming and going of challenge English skills. And it's not just Asians, not just Chinese and Chinese. There's a lot of other immigrants here. I think people don't realize, including Albanians, Middle Eastern folks, Eastern Europe folks, especially now a lot of Eastern Europe folks, as well as people from Caribbean countries. And, I have friends, Nepal, still has people here. And they're, it's really a metropolitan city here in
Brooklyn. Oh, yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, because just this morning I met two folks from the Salvation Army, one from the Dominican Republic and one from India.
Absolutely. And I think we kind of forget that sometimes about the city. And the city needs to change with its population, because I'm a believer, it's like customer service, right? You got to change with the times as people around you change to make sure the service they get. The state needs to do that too. It's a big priority for actually the Black, Latino, and Asian caucuses. It's a huge priority for us to encourage Governor Healey to kind of start tweaking the government to reflect the population we serve and to learn more about the people we serve. Mm-hmm. Can't just sit here and assume, well, I can do this, you can do this too. Well, it's not quite that simple. You do need to know your customer base. And, it's no different than private business, but government should, work for people. It should change for the people it's working for, because the people there should have access to government like everyone else does. But that's just my philosophy. Like I said, all you can do is advocate at the state level what we're looking for.
I mean, the private sector certainly takes note because it's their livelihood. So, I mean, if they don't adapt to the times, they get left in the dust.
Well, I'm old enough to remember, up in Norfolk Downs, businesses started adding some Chinese to the storefront windows because they're trying to attract Chinese customers. There was some businesses opened up, they were targeting Chinese customers. Some succeeded and some failed. I remember different ones in Wallston, North Quincy that succeeded and failed. But, the big change was, 25 years ago, some regular businesses that were there before the big changeovers, started trying to, get people to speak a second language, try to get people who, can provide some Chinese wording on their doors. But again, I still believe that, if you provide a unique skill set, you should be compensated for that unique skill set that you're looking for. But that's just me.
Well, that's why we like talking to you, Tacky, because we get all your perspectives.
I'm just saying, you got something you can provide that someone else can't provide. So why are you being paid the same as somebody else? I'm just saying.
Hey, I saw a picture of you with the two newest Eagle Scouts.
Yeah, it was great to see Enzo and Jonathan Thomas. Thomas Jonathan. It's the only guy with two names I know that's mushed together. And I do enjoy seeing people take leadership, especially young men and young women take leadership at home in the community and put together some projects. And they took the initiative. And that's a big part of it. You got to take initiative and you got to follow through on it. And that's what's very impressive, especially with young men and women, where it's up to you. And that's how you lead. You got to follow through. So Enzo did a project to clean up Raccoon Island and also put some signage up, historical signage, and a website to talk about Raccoon Island. I've not been to Raccoon Island, just so you all know. I'm not a water person to start with, but maybe I'll ask a friend on a boat, because I'm not going to try to wade over at low tide that they've been told you could do, but I'm not going to do that.
Which people do, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'll never get out of the mud flat. I just can see myself trapped.
There's a new story.
Oh yeah, rising water. Joe's out there with his camera in a dinghy watching water rise and see how long the rep lasts before he drowns. I can see that.
Oh no, I would call for help after I got my pictures.
And the other project was interviewing veterans from different generations, going from the World War II generation down to the most recent conflicts, and people are still in active service and sharing those stories. And these oral histories are actually pretty important. It's, I think, a great project too, to record oral history. And we don't do that much anymore, which is very unfortunate. Very unfortunate, because some That's of these-
stories, yeah, that generation in particular didn't talk a lot about their experience.
No, and it's like, most of you may know my father passed away when I was a teenager, and I never got my father's stories, actually, and it's in any near entirety about his young life. And And there's a tragedy there too, because, you know, it's good to know about the challenges your parents face and grandparents face, and greater appreciation of, you know, life you got now. We tend to live in the moment. It's kind of being who we are. But you know, you ain't the end or be all of anything now. I mean, people tend to like, it's, you're in the moment, you're the be all of end all, but you're not. And some of the folks, you know, work pretty hard to get here and get where they need to be. And the idea of passing it forward is not just buying someone a cup of coffee in front of you. It's about paying it forward for the generation behind you to carry on the legacy of helping someone else out, because, you know, they were working to help you out.
Right. We are at the end of our hour, Jackie, believe it or not.
Oh, really? Time flies when we're having fun, huh?
That's right. Tune in next week when we see Tacky take a plunge in Wollaston Beach. No,
no. Again, don't do water. Not a water guy. But so how do you want to find me, right? This is as my food Boston just came out. Yep. 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370. In room 42 of sales, we are staffed. We are there. Come visit if you have a chance. Obviously, I'm still my dining room, as you can see. But, you know, I am popping in and out of the office more often than ever. And, of course, you know, we do take appointments, so give us a call. And, you know, I've been known to do this more with constituents, as well as people coming to stay at, also visiting them at a coffee shop or something. The website is malegislature.gov, or the public hearings and everything's being posted up there, but as well as the State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook and tackychan.org and at Tacky Chan Twitter. So we do post stuff, basically work-related stuff and place I've been and things we're working on or have been done, as well as try to get some useful information out there, telephone numbers before you see us. So tackychan.org, malegislature.gov, State Representative Tacky Chan on Facebook, as well as at Tacky Chan on Twitter. And of course, my email is tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. You know, free to email. I do read this stuff. I may not remember everything I read, but there's a lot of reading involved. And, we'll have staff get back to you. I get back to you depending on what the situation is. And we like to do our homework before we talk to you. Or if you don't give me a lot to work with on your email, then we have to find you to talk to you. So we can do some homework to understand what you're asking about and see if we can help you out or not.
Excellent. All right. Have a great week, and we'll check in next week.
Absolutely. We'll see you in a week's time.